Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is. Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. Russia is changing the way it deals with the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, also known as NATO. Last month, Russian President Vladimir Putin approved a new military doctrine, a statement of government policy. The doctrine is said to answer the threat Russia says has resulted from NATO's expansion and military buildup at its border. NATO has strengthened its military force in Eastern Europe over the past year because of Russia's support for rebels in Eastern Ukraine. But as we hear from Bob Doty, Russia says this increased activity in and near Eastern Europe is, in its words, a violation of international law.
People who have seen the wording of the new doctrine say it appears to deal with the United States. The doctrine criticizes what it calls acts contrary to international law aimed against the sovereignty, political independence, and territorial integrity of states. It says these are threats to international peace, security, global and regional stability. The document also criticizes the West's new anti-ballistic missile systems. The United States and some of its allies have expanded anti-missile systems in recent years. Russia has opposed the expansion. It says the missile systems weaken international security and affect the nuclear balance of power. A NATO official told VOA that the alliance is not a threat to Russia or any nation. The official said, "Any moves by NATO to protect its members are clearly defensive and do not violate international law." The official said, "Russia is violating international law and weakening European security with its decision to support anti-government forces in Ukraine." The official said, "NATO wants a good relationship with Russia." But the official said that is only possible if Russia obeys international law, including the right of nations to choose their future freely. Carl Altau is the managing director of the Joint Baltic American National Committee. He says the new doctrine is more evidence that President Putin is seeking to gain a stronger hold on power in Russia. Mr. Altau says the doctrine will isolate or separate Mr. Putin and his government from other countries. He says the statement and Mr. Putin's threats against countries he considers enemies are designed to intimidate or frighten Western nations and pressure them not to take action. Mr. Altau also says the doctrine is designed to increase the support of the Russian people for their country. He says Mr. Putin's government has been directing propaganda towards the Russian people. Mr. Altau says the new doctrine is dangerous for its neighbors, including the Baltic countries. He says the Baltics and other European countries were absolutely correct in believing that Russia would work hard to become powerful after the collapse of the Soviet Union. Mr. Altau says Mr. Putin's aggressive military moves affect not just Europe, He notes that for months, Russia has sent military airplanes on training exercises thousands of kilometers from their home bases. He says Russia is now more willing to consider using nuclear weapons, either in answer to an attack or as an aggressive move. He says that is extremely dangerous.
Bob Doty will return with more on this story in a moment. You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English.
Eric Shirayev teaches international relations and political psychology at George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia. Professor Shirayev has written about relations between Russia and the United States. He says Russia has spent almost 3 years preparing the new military doctrine. But he says not much of it is new. He says it claims there is a reduced threat of nuclear war, but adds that Russia faces increased threats from other conflicts. Professor Shirayev says strong governments are supposed to write military doctrines, but he says it would be very difficult for Russia to enact the new doctrine. He says the document suggests there are threats to the Russian government from within the country. He says some officials will use the new doctrine as a reason to further limit political rights in Russia. Longtime observers of Russia are noting the importance of the decision to release the doctrine now. The release came almost a year after conflict began in eastern Ukraine. The unrest followed protests in the capital, Kiev. The demonstration forced Ukraine's president into exile in Russia. Since then, Russia has taken control of the Crimean Peninsula. And Russian-supported rebels have clashed with government troops in eastern Ukraine. Last month, the pro-Western parliament in Ukraine approved a law that ended the country's policy of neutrality. Some Ukrainians hope this will lead to European Union and NATO membership for the country. Russia quickly reacted to the vote. Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said the move was, in his words, counterproductive. NATO has increased its military presence in Eastern Europe over the past year because of Russia's support for rebels in eastern Ukraine. The Russian government continues to deny it supports the rebels. I'm Bob Doty.
And that's our program for today. Be sure to join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
from VOA Learning English. This is In the News. The United Nations says conflicts forced many people from their homes during the first half of 2014. The UN Refugee Agency reported this week that 5.5 million people were forcibly displaced during that six-month period. The agency says these men, women, and children added to the record 51.2 million people who were displaced worldwide by the end of 2013. At this rate, UN officials fear the number of people forcibly displaced might set another record. Between January and June of 2014, 1.4 million people fled across international borders, becoming refugees. The rest, more than 4 million people, became displaced within their own countries. Adrian Edwards is a spokesman for UNHCR, the UN Refugee Agency. He says that for the first time, Syrians have become the largest refugee population. Until now, Afghans were the single largest population. Afghans were the biggest group overseen by UNHCR for more than 30 years.
Syria has really been the war that's changed everything. Almost 10 million refugees and internally displaced people as of mid-2014. Those numbers are still rising. One in every four refugees that UNHCR is today dealing with is a Syrian. Syria is what happens when a war won't be stopped. And in that region around Syria, where so many refugees are, we're meanwhile seeing that asylum is becoming massively stretched.
The new UN report says the world is facing a deadly mix of both new and old conflicts. The report notes relatively new conflicts in places such as Syria, the Central African Republic, and South Sudan. It says this unrest is taking place at the same time that old conflicts continue to displace individuals and families. The UNHCR says there are 2.7 million Afghan refugees worldwide. They represent the largest protracted refugee population under the UN agency's care. The report lists the home countries of other big refugee populations. After Syria and Afghanistan, the largest numbers of refugees under the agency's care come from Somalia, Sudan, South Sudan, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Myanmar, also known as Burma, and Iraq. The UNHCR's Adrian Edwards says poor countries and those close to areas of conflict have the hardest time dealing with refugees.
Relative to their population sizes, Jordan and Lebanon are hosting most refugees, almost 1.8 million combined. The biggest economic burden, though, is being felt by other countries. That's Ethiopia and Pakistan in particular, which, relative to the size of their economies, have more refugees than any other country. Major conflicts and displacement in places such as Central African Republic, South Sudan, is also happening. That's in danger of being forgotten by publics and by donors.
Adrian Edwards notes that African conflicts are not limited to African nations alone. He says the humanitarian and economic effects for poor neighboring countries are huge. He says some countries are sheltering hundreds of thousands of refugees, yet lack the money and supplies to care for them. And that's In the News from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Now, the special English program, American Stories. Our story today is called The Purloined Letter. It was written by Edgar Allan Poe. Poe is generally known for his horror stories. This is the third of three stories he wrote about Auguste Dupin and how he solves crimes. The story is about a stolen letter. It first appeared in 1844 in a yearly magazine. It was reprinted in many publications, newspapers, and books. This is one of Poe's stories that influenced the development of the modern detective story. Here is Shep O'Neill with The Purloined Letter.
One evening in Paris, during the autumn of 1845, I went to visit a friend, Auguste Dupin. We were smoking our pipes and talking when the door of his apartment opened. Mr. Germain, the head of the Paris police force, came into the room. "I came to ask your advice," Germain said to my friend Dupin. "I'm trying to solve a very important case. It is also a very simple case, so I really need your help. But I thought you would like to hear about it, because it is so strange. My men and I have worked on this case for 3 months, as Germain said. It is a very simple case of robbery, but we still cannot solve it." Dupin took the pipe out of his mouth. "Perhaps the mystery is too simple," he said. Germain began to laugh. "Too simple," he said. "Who ever heard of such a thing?" I looked at Germain. "Why don't you tell us the problem?" I said. Germain stopped laughing and sat down. "All right," he said. "But you must never tell anyone I told you this. The wife of a very important person needs help. I cannot tell you her name, because her husband is a powerful man in the French government. Let us just call her Madame X. 3 months ago, someone stole a letter from Madame X. She is offering a large amount of money to anyone who can return the letter to her. We know that her husband's political enemy, Mr. Darcy, stole the letter. We also know it is somewhere in his apartment. Darcy plans to use the letter to embarrass Madame X's husband and destroy his political power. As you know, I have keys which can open any lock in Paris. For the last 3 months, my men and I have spent every evening looking for the letter in his apartment, but we cannot find it." Dupin stopped smoking. "Tell me how you looked for it," he said. Germain moved forward in his chair. "We took our time," he said. "First, we examined the furniture in every room. We opened all the drawers. We looked under the rugs. We searched behind all the paintings on the walls. We opened every book. We removed the boards of the floor. We even took the tops off the tables to see if he had hidden the letter in the table legs. But we cannot find it. What do you advise me to do?" Dupin puffed on his pipe. "What does the letter look like?" he asked. "It is in a white envelope with a red stamp," Germain said. "The address is written in large black letters." Dupin puffed on his pipe again. "I advise you to go back and search the apartment again," he said. About 1 month later, Germain came back to see us. "I followed your advice," he said, "but I still have not found the letter." Dupin smiled. "I knew you would not find it," he said. Germain became very red in the face. "Then why did you make me search the apartment again?" he shouted. "My dear Germain," Dupin said, "let me tell you a little story. Do you remember the famous Dr. Louis Abernathy?"
"No," Germain shouted. "Get to the point, Dupin."
Of course," Dupin said. "Once a rich old man met Abernathy at a party. The old man was not feeling very well. He decided he would get a medical opinion from the doctor without paying for it. So he described his problems to Abernathy. 'Now, doctor,' the old man said, 'suppose you had a patient like that. What would you tell him to take?' 'Oh, that is quite simple,' said Abernathy. 'I would tell him to take my advice.'" Germain looked embarrassed.
"Look here, Dupin, I'm perfectly willing to pay for advice."
Dupin smiled at Germain. "How much money did you say the reward was?" he asked. Germain sighed. "I do not want to tell you the exact amount, but I would give 50,000 francs to the person who helps me find that letter." "In that case," Dupin said, "take out your checkbook and write me a check for 50,000 francs. When you have signed the check, I will give you the letter." Germain looked at Dupin with his mouth open. His eyes seemed to jump out of his head. Then he took out his checkbook and pen and wrote a check for 50,000 francs. He gave it to Dupin. My friend examined the check carefully and put it in his pocket. Then he unlocked a drawer of his desk, took out the letter, and gave it to Germain. The policeman's hands shook as he opened the letter. He read it quickly. Then he put it in his pocket and ran out of the room without saying a word. "Dupin," I said, as I turned to my friend, "how did you solve the mystery?" "It was simple, my friend," he said. "Germain and his policeman could not find the letter because they did not try to understand the mind of the man who stole it. Instead, they looked for the letter where they would have hidden it. Mr. Darcy is not a policeman. He is, however, very intelligent. He knew the police would search his apartment. He also knew how police think, so he did not hide the letter where he knew they would look for it. Do you remember how Germain laughed when I said the mystery was difficult for him to solve because it was so simple?" Dupin filled his pipe with tobacco and lit it. "Well, the more I thought about it, the more I realized the police could not find the letter, because Darcy had not hidden it at all. So I went to visit Darcy in his apartment. I took a pair of dark green eyeglasses with me. I explained to him that I was having trouble with my eyes and needed to wear the dark glasses at all times. He believed me. The glasses permitted me to look around the apartment while I seemed only to be talking to him. I paid special attention to a large desk where there were a lot of papers and books. However, I saw nothing suspicious there. After a few minutes, however,
I noticed a small shelf over the fireplace. A few postcards and a letter were lying on the shelf. The letter looked very old and dirty. As soon as I saw this letter, I decided it must be the one I was looking for. It must be, even though it was completely different from the one Germain had described. This letter had a large green stamp on it. The address was written in small letters, in blue ink. I memorized every detail of the letter while I talked to Darcy. Then, when he was not looking, I dropped one of my gloves on the floor under my chair. The next morning I stopped at his apartment to look for my glove. While we were talking, we heard people shouting in the street. Darcy went to the window and looked out. Quickly, I stepped to the shelf and put the letter in my pocket. Then I replaced it with a letter that looked exactly like it, which I had taken with me. I had made it the night before. The trouble in the street was caused by a man who had almost been run over by a horse and carriage. He was not hurt, and soon the crowd of people went away. When it was over, Darcy came away from the window. I said goodbye and left. The man who almost had an accident was one of my servants. I had paid him to create the incident. Dupin stopped talking to light his pipe. I did not understand. "But, Dupin," I said, "why did you go to the trouble of replacing the letter? Why not just take it and leave?" Dupin smiled. "Darcy is a dangerous man," he said, "and he has many loyal servants. If I had taken the letter, I might never have left his apartment alive."
The Purloined Letter was written by Edgar Allan Poe and adapted into Special English by Donna DeSanctis. The storyteller was Shep O'Neill. The producer was Lawan Davis. You can read and listen to other American stories at our website, voaspecialenglish.com. I'm Barbara Klein.